welcome to the show. It is signed, sealed, delivered. I'm yours. For all of you who know the reference, you get it. For all of you who don't, I got married on Saturday, so I'm signed, sealed,
yes,
delivered.
Congrats to Mr. Tal Rayside and Mrs. Erica Wolf. It's beautiful, man. Tal and Erica had a wonderful wedding. And listen, we always tell you, we're talking sports with friends, and we consider you part of our family. And you know what? We thank you for listening. And that's it. You are part of our family. So we give you a little insight every once in a while. You know, Ray and Tay are married guys, bringing you sports, 30-something years, and now, you know, almost a year on the radio. So listen, you want to join the ride, give us a call, 718-664-9098. Always, we just love your emails, rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. And our website, rayandtaytoday.com. We've got everything. A little bit of the mock drafts, the NFL draft results, the NBA mock draft, the playoff tree, baseball standings, our fantasy baseball, old shows. You got to check out the Charles Davis episode from last week. 36 minutes of, you know, it's an hour show, 36 minutes of just the greatest football talk that you might hear. So we thank him from Fox Sports and the NFL Network. It was just amazing. So, Ray, let them know who we have on our show today and how we're getting down for our audience.
Yes, so we're getting down with a special guest. We've got Ian Begley from ESPN New York, and he carries the flag for ESPN in New York, doing a lot of local teams. So he covers the Yankees, he covers the Mets. Right now he's covering the Knicks. He'll talk about the Knicks, how the Knicks season was, how it ended, you know, and everything around New York Knicks basketball before he transitions to baseball. But Ian's going to be joining us during the show. We just hot off the presses. They called him in at ESPN. So he's going to be calling in sometime during the hour. He said we were scheduled to have him at the 6:30 mark, right in the middle of the hour, but we're going to have him sometime during the hour. So he'll pop in when he can. He said he's a regular on our show, and he said he'll as soon as he can free up at ESPN, he's going to give us a call, and he'll call in for us. So we appreciate Ian and all the love that he shows us.
Listen, Ian's always there, you know, the next beat writer with all the press conferences. You hear him and see him, you know, asking great questions. And he's our Nick insider, man. You know, we've got Ian and a couple other guys. Listen, we've talked to Al Trotwig, Anthony Donahue, Edgar Burgos. So we're big with all the Nick guys, and you just got to love it. And so we definitely will hear from Ian and thank him. And go ahead, finish telling him, man.
So
we'll talk about the rest of it, too.
We've got Ian's our highlighted guest. And then we've got breaking news, like we always do. We'll take you around the world of sports. We'll talk NBA. Hey, we're down to the conference finals. So we've got 1-2, 1-3 in the East, and we've got 2-5 in the West. So interesting conference finals. We'll talk about that. Talk about you know, what we think about these best of seven series. We'll have Ian on the show during the hour. And we'll also talk about Major League Baseball. So we got a lot of juicy sports. We have the draft lottery tomorrow. So, you know, if you know the order of the ping pong balls, then call us up and let us know. But if you don't, but if you know the order, then it's rigged. So hopefully you don't know the order, and it's totally random tomorrow.
Hey,
but
we've been watching this since the Patrick Ewing draft, right, Ray? You know,
the
lottery has been a big deal for us.
The envelope was a little greasy, or it was a little cold. What are you saying? That there was a little, you know.
Hey, no, I'm just saying we've been watching the NBA draft lottery for a long time. That's all I said.
True.
Nothing.
That's true.
No,
that's
no
a,
conspiracy.
That's a factual
I'm not going
statement.
There.
That's a factual statement right there. We have, man. We've attended many drafts when they were at the Garden.
Yeah.
That was very. That was a fun experience. So yeah. So let's get into it. Let's talk a little bit about some breaking news from the world of sports.
Well, you know, I just wanted to touch on a little bit of football, and the football news has been dying down a little bit, obviously, you know, the mini camps and stuff like that. But one thing that I thought was kind of interesting, they kind of just put something out there that I guess another factual statement. The Seattle Seahawks, they lead the NFL in PED suspensions since Pete Carroll has come into the league.
Wow.
I don't know. What do you think about that? That's kind of
So it's
for those
hard.
Who don't know, right, Pete Carroll has been there since 2010, and he left USC, you know, and just all the stuff. And, you know, we've got the overhaul ruling for Richard Sherman with the Adderall. But, you know, there's been other guys on the team that they're leading the league since, you know, since 2010. So,
look, I don't want to draw the correlation because I think it's unfair without having the data. But, again, factual statements are that Pete Carroll was the coach at USC for a long time. And then, as soon as he leaves, USC goes on probation. So, essentially, the Matt Barkley era was under a shroud of investigation, and that result, or the remnants, and his 4 years were as a result of all that happened to that group before him, so Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart and that whole crew. And then he goes up to Seattle, and apparently there's some funny business going on in Seattle. Now, you can't assume that the pros is like college, right? These professional athletes are going to treat their bodies a lot differently than the college athletes are. So I'm sure that if there is, you know, suspicion of PED activity, it's not because the, you know, coaches and trainers, you know, were directly involved. I mean, maybe they turned a blind eye, but I think these are the choices that these grown men and you know, professionals make. So it's, you know, it's hard to say that this happened under the Pete Carroll regime, because I think that in the pros it's a lot different from in college, to do, you know, recruiting violations and all this stuff. So I don't really equate the two. But it is a little unfortunate that under this one coach's, you know, tenure, USC, after he leaves, goes on probation, and now Seattle's having some issues with the PED policy with the NFL.
Yeah. Well, real quick, you know, before we leave the NFL, I'm happy. One of our favorite veteran players, Dwight Freeney, signed with the Chargers a 2-year deal. Unfortunately, Melvin Ingram had, you know, got injured in the minicamp. And they signed Freeney, and he's going to, you know, be there with Teo and the Chargers. And I think, actually, it's a good pickup, because I think Freeney can still rush that passer, right? So I got a funny feeling about the Chargers this year.
Really? Okay.
I like the core, you know, the coach, Mike McCoy. I just think it's going to be an interesting season, and just definitely happy for Dwight Freeney. Now, switching to a little local flavor, a little Brooklyn potential news. It looks like one of our favorite point guards from Michigan State and the NBA coach, you know, around the league a bit, Scott Skiles, may have the inside track and be the front runner to be hired by the Brooklyn Nets. What are your initial thoughts about that?
So we talked a little bit about this off air. Look, Scotty Skiles, you know, he was our boy from Michigan State. And does he still have the record for most assists in an NBA game?
Was it 27 or 21? Yeah, something like that.
28.
Yeah.
We'll look that up. And
I think
that
he does,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, so Scotty Skiles is a hard-nosed coach, and he doesn't take any crap from anybody. So I like him, and I like his style. The problem I have with Scotty Skiles is that he's a little bit like Larry Brown in the sense that he grates on your nerves, apparently, as a player, and he can't stay anywhere for more than a few years. But his message of hard-nosed defense, you know, it's almost like the Avery Johnson message delivered a little bit differently, right? Avery's got the, hey, y'all, we're going to play some ball tonight, you know? So he's got that charm, that, you know, southern drawl.
Yeah.
And his charm, and Scotty Skiles is like the blue-collar equivalent of that.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure.
And both hard-nosed point guards, right? You know.
Yes, of course. Yep. Sort of lower on the talent scale, higher on the heart and toughness scale.
Definitely.
I don't know. I don't know how Scotty Skiles works with this roster, though.
Well, so, I guess that's
sure.
One. You know. Exactly. That's one you definitely will have to check out and see. I'll say this. I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting, and they got to do something in Brooklyn. If you're not getting Phil Jackson, you got to bring in somebody that, you know, I think can really push these players to a place where they're not comfortable. They've proven being comfortable will get them bumped in the first round when they shouldn't lose. So they need to be uncomfortable. Now, just another quick little news, and we'll talk to Ian about this.
Wait, let me just finish this. In the power of the internet, so we got our answer. The NBA single season assist record is held by our boy Scotty Skiles, who had 30 assists when he was a member of the Orlando Magic, and they played the Denver Nuggets on December 30th, 1990. So can you imagine 30 assists? And you know
what I was just going to say, 89, but right there you go, 1990, wow.
The assists you only get from made baskets, right? So, like, if you give an assist and the guy misses and he gets two free throws, you don't get an assist for that. So he directly contributed to 60 points, if not more. He maybe contributed to 75, 80 points that night. But 30 assists. Wow.
Yeah. And you know what? Before Jay Williams, you know, White Chocolate, before some of these other guys – Scotty Skiles, it wasn't just like he, you know, he could boogie a little bit with the handle, but Scotty Skiles was a nasty passer, and he could show off a little bit, and he could hit the jumper, and, he wasn't like, you know, athletic point guard like these guys like Kyrie and you know, D. Williams and Rose and stuff, but he was, like you said, hard-nosed, and what a passer. So, yeah. No, I was just going to say, and we'll talk to Ian about this, with Melo, looks like the knee doesn't need surgery, but they're going to examine the shoulder. And I got a funny feeling, Melo, and Reggie Miller spoke about this, when your shoulder hurts, even though it's off your offhand, it throws off your shot a little bit, and we know shooting percentage was down. I think Melo was pretty banged up in this series. No excuses. In the final game, what did he drop, 42? So game six, he showed up and came to play.
39.
I mean, 42, I think, something like, you know, I got to check that out, but I think it's 42 or something like that. But either way, Melo played and came, you know, he gave it his all, and I just think he was playing injured. So we'll see in the coming weeks whether or not, you know, Carmelo needs surgery. So, well, let's jump into it. There's a couple of baseball things, but we'll talk about it when we wrap up the show with some baseball. But getting into these playoffs, we'll start with the new series first, and we'll backtrack with Ian and wrapping up Knicks Pacers, right? So Western Conference Finals, Spurs, they kind of put it on the Grizzlies, huh? Game one. I mean, game one was yesterday. They play again Tuesday, game two, and the lottery is tomorrow night on ESPN. And then TNT has the Eastern Conference with the Pacers going to the Heat. So let's talk about Grizzlies Spurs. What did you think about game one and Tony Parker and what the Spurs were able to do?
Well, two things stood out. The first quarter, which basically the game was decided in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Memphis, even though they did it, ironically enough, against Oklahoma City, but Memphis is not really a team that can come back very easily. They can because they can shut you down defensively, but they're not the team to easily go on, you know, a 15-5 run. Right, they've got to grind that out. So for them to go down 30-14 in the first quarter, that's tough. That's tough for them to recover from. And then at the end of the day, they can't win this series unless Zach Randolph plays, you know, Zach Randolph ball. And you know, he's been a little inconsistent in the sense that you always feel his presence, but for some reason, in that first series against Oklahoma City and then a couple games in or that last series against Oklahoma City and for a couple games against the Clippers, you know, you looked at the statue. I mean, you saw him because you can't miss him. You can't miss Z-Bo on the court. But then you looked at the box score, and you're like, really? Those aren't Z-Bo-type numbers. So you got to figure that Z-Bo and Marc Gasol have to basically neutralize the San Antonio front court and then – Make the other the players not named Tony Parker beat you, right? So you got to live with Kawhi Leonard and
Danny Green,
Diao, Danny Green, Manu Ginobili. You know these are all players that have offensive skills, right? But you've got to make all of them beat you. And you're not going to win a game when you go down that much to San Antonio because you're not Oklahoma City and you can't come back from that big a deficit. And Z-Bo, of course, look, he had a bad game. It's okay to have a bad game. It's only one game. And this is a team that's supremely confident after having beaten two teams that they technically, you know, were not supposed to beat. And also they beat this same San Antonio team 2 years ago. So I'm not panicked yet. If I'm obviously if I'm the Grizzlies, if I'm San Antonio, I'm feeling good. And you were able to limit people's minutes, so that's good for that older team, especially playing, you know, 2 days later. So you were able to keep people's minutes down. Timmy only played 27 minutes, and I think Ginobili played 21, 22 minutes. So that's good for San Antonio. So they held serve. Don't look too much into it, but just Memphis can't go down. Memphis has to come out stronger than that in the first and the third quarters.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, I think I was sort of, you know, it looked like Conley. I want to see, I guess for me, one of the keys in this series, I think the way Memphis can win it is definitely with Gasol and Zebo. But you want to see Conley try to hold his own as best he can, against Tony Parker. Because if Parker totally dominates him, you're going to have a funny feeling that the Spurs will, you know, be able to beat them in, you know, six or seven, because he's such a difference maker, I think, Tony Parker, right? When he gets to penetrate in and he's scoring, you know, anywhere from 18 to 23, and he gets you anywhere from 6 to 9 assists, and, you know, just even maybe the penetrate and then the pass out to the next guy, and then he swings it over to, you know, Ginobili, or Ginobili swings it to Leonard, you know?
We've got some callers on the air. Hold on. Let's try and pull in a caller here.
Okay.
Hello, caller. You're on the air. This is Ray and Tay.
Yes, this is Ian Bagley. How you guys doing?
Hey, Ian. What's up? How are
you? Ian.
What's going on? How you guys doing?
Doing great. How are you?
We're doing good.
I'm good.
A little
Thank
upset,
you.
Though.
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
what's up,
man? Well, listen, let's jump right into it. I know, you know, you're running around and really busy, so we appreciate you coming on. I guess I want to – it's a long question, and here it is. Was it their size? Was it the Pacers rebounding? Did Vogel maybe a smidget out-coach Woody? Were Chandler, Melo, a little injured, you know, was it JR and Melo, you know, not sharing the ball, not shooting good enough? To sum it up, how and why do you think we lost in a 6-game series to a Pacer team that didn't have George Hill for one game and didn't have Danny Granger for the whole series? And I think a lot of us thought that they could probably pull this out. How would you sum up our loss and what do you think, you know, the pieces to it?
If I was going to point to one thing, I would say rebounding. The Pacers crushed the Knicks on the boards for most of the series. They out-rebounded the Knicks by an average of 10 rebounds per game. And in their four wins, they really cleaned up on the boards. And in the Knicks' two wins, they played the Pacers pretty much even on the board. So I think that was a key to this series. And, you know, the Knicks personnel-wise just could not match up with Indiana to keep them off the glass. You know, the Pacers were so long, so athletic at every position, and they rebounded as a team. Now, when the Knicks were successful, they put a body on a body. All five guys were focused on rebounding, and that's what enabled them to go board for board with the Pacers. But in those losses, they didn't do that. And what that led to was a bunch of second-chance points for Indiana. Indiana ended up making most of the hustle plays and got most of the points in the paint. And I think that's what the difference was, by and large, in this series.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because this Indiana team on the surface is not a great offensive team, but if they can get second-chance points,
second, third chances,
second shots, then it allows a, you know, sort of an average offensive team to score, you know, to score much better. But they're a great defensive team, Indiana, and you got to give them credit for what they did to the Knicks, you know, on that side of the ball. Now, let me ask you something. So if you're the Knicks and you say, hey, we've got this fundamental issue with size, right, and rebounding, and even when Amari comes back next year, he's not a great rebounder, especially on the defensive boards. So what do you do in the offseason if you're Knicks management, between the draft and free agency? And obviously you've got the big question of J.R. Smith and how much money you can free up to pay him. But what are you thinking? How are the wheels churning in the Knicks front office?
I think they're going to go after a young big, a guy who can play both ends of the floor, though, because they have a bunch of players who excel at one end of the floor but don't give you anything or much on the other end. I'm looking at guys like, you know, Carmelo, great offensive player, a decent defender. Tyson Chandler, great defensive player, not a great offensive player. I think Amon Shumpert and J.R. Smith are the only guys who you can really say, and J.R. only when he's engaged, are the only guys who you can say are two-way players. So I think the Knicks will go after a young big man, but I think their targets in free agency will be guys who are a little more versatile than the guys they have on this roster right now. And, you know, especially with that front line, I think they're going to have to upgrade and go younger because, you know, the veteran approach, you saw what happened. I mean, those guys broke down toward the end of the season, and they weren't available for you in the playoffs when you really needed size to really combat what Indiana had on the interior.
Right. And, you know, Ian, with sort of like what Ray was saying with the salary cap issues, I mean, obviously Kidd is still under contract. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with Martin, although I like what he gave. And, you know, me, I've been cheerleading for Copeland forever. So in terms of what you said right there with the youth, I think, you know, possibly working on his defensive game and giving him some more minutes. But obviously you could probably see a four or five new guys on this roster. Would you say so, including our 24th draft pick, where maybe they get like a Deshaun Thomas from Ohio State or a Whiffy from Kansas? Do you think we'll have that much of a turnover and we could do it financially? Because we're going to lose Camby and Wallace probably, right?
Well, Camby's probably coming back. I don't think he's going to leave guaranteed money on the table. But, I mean, as far as adding guys, you know, they will have the mini mid-level exception. They will have the veterans minimum to throw out there. So, you know, they don't have much to spend, but there is a little bit of wiggle room. So you could have three or four new faces on this team. Maybe they're unable to bring back Prigioni and Copeland, and Kenyon Martin wants to be back, so the Knicks want him back. So there could be some turnover on this roster, that's for sure, even though there isn't a ton of wiggle room for Glenn Grunwald to work with.
Yeah, that's a great
point.
And you know, looking at this Eastern Conference finals, so having seen the Knicks battle Miami and then obviously having seen Indiana beat the Knicks, everybody in New York is obviously waiting to see the Knicks Heat in the finals, 1-2, but we've got 1-3. So now that we're all, you know, on the sidelines as Knicks fans, how do you see this series? What do you think about this Eastern Conference finals?
I love what Indiana has and how it presents such a challenge for Miami, because Roy Hibbert had a great series against the Knicks. He really outplayed Tyson Chandler. And the Heat on the interior, you know, they don't have anyone who can defend the way we thought Tyson Chandler would be able to. Chris Bosh is a pretty good defender, but he's not on the level of Tyson Chandler. So I think the Heat is going to have its hands full with Roy Hibbert and with that whole Pacer front line with David West. excuse me, with Paul George. So I'm excited to see how this series plays out. I really think it's a great matchup for all basketball fans. I think I could see the Pacers easily taking two games off the Heat. It's all about them winning at least once in Miami. You saw how key that was in this Knicks series. The Pacers got a split in New York and were able to take care of business at home, and that's what ultimately led to them winning in six games. So if they can get a game in Miami, we're in for a really good series.
Yeah, and people forget that last year it took a great 41-point effort from Dwayne Wade, but they had the Heat on the ropes last year too.
Yeah,
so this Indiana team, because of their unique structure and because of their size that not many other teams in this modern era of the NBA have, they present matchup problems. They're a little bit short offensively, and obviously losing Danny Granger doesn't help, but boy, did Paul George step his game up. So what a great, you know, piece to fill in for Granger.
Yeah,
definitely.
No,
hey, Ian, what did you think about Stevenson, man, the way he stepped up? Lance Stevenson, obviously a local kid, he was huge in Game 6 and played extremely well in Game 1. What did you think how, you know, the Knicks seemed like they couldn't match up with him? Well, speak on him for a quick second.
He is such a talented player. You know, I got a chance to cover him in high school when he was at Lincoln, and we saw how he was just a man among boys back then. But he's really developed as a guy who – you know, we talk about the Knicks don't have enough guys who can play on both ends. Lance can play on both ends. He has the athleticism to guard some of the most versatile players in the NBA, and he does a great job on the offensive end at cutting to the basket, finding seams in the defense, exploiting those seams. He's extremely aggressive in attacking the rim, and the Knicks didn't really have an answer for him in that game six when he had, you know, 25 points, I believe 10 rebounds. He was just fantastic.
He killed us.
Good for him. He's a local product. You know, he's one of these guys that probably is having a much better NBA career than he even had, you know, at Cincinnati. Now, he wasn't there for that long, but you know, he's one of these guys that's really stepped up his game and found himself a home in Indiana. And what do you think about Vogel? What do you think about the coach there in Indiana? He's doing a great job. Both young coaches, I mean, people don't seem to give – you know, these coaches enough credit, but both coaches in this, especially in the East, I mean the West as well, but in the East are just fantastic young coaches.
Yeah, Vogel's a great young coach. I thought he deserved more consideration for Coach of the Year than he actually received from the voters. You know, he did a good job in this series. I thought, you know, he outcoached Woodson at a lot of points in this series, especially when the Knicks elected to go big in Game 4. He didn't respond to that. He didn't panic. He said, we're going to do what we do. They're trying to play to our strengths. We're still going to be who we are. And then the Pacers came out, beat the Knicks by 11 points, really handled them, and made a statement in that game. So I think Frank Vogel had a tremendous series against Mike Woodson, and I'm excited to see how he matches up X's and O's-wise and tries to slow down LeBron James, because he's got a big weapon on his side, and Paul George, one of the top defenders, I think, in the league, who could make life tough for LeBron.
LeBron's going to earn. LeBron will definitely earn baskets, I think, against the Pacers, and it'll be really interesting to see if Dwayne Wade is less than 80%. You could wind up seeing the upset, but it's just hard to believe that LeBron's going to just, you know. If, I feel like this guy, if he has to, Ian, you know, he'll score 50. It's just who he is right now, you know?
Yeah, you know, he's the best player on the planet, and he's playing the best basketball of his career. So no easy task to stop him, but the Pacers certainly have the length and the athleticism to make it difficult for LeBron, to make life uncomfortable for him. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to see how things play out in the series.
Hey, that's awesome.
So,
Ian, we don't want to take up too much of your time. So I just wanted to ask you real quick, parting note or parting thought on the West, and then, again, thank you so much for joining us. I know you had a hectic day today, but we appreciate you coming on with us.
No problem, guys. Anytime. I will say about the Western Conference Series, don't write off Memphis. You know, we've seen in each playoff series this year, they've gotten crushed in Game 1. They've come back and win the series, so I think Zach Randolph will bounce back, and I think Memphis' front line is going to give San Antonio more trouble than it did in Game 1, and we're going to have ourselves a series. I still like Memphis in that series. Maybe I always seem to count out the Spurs too soon, but I just think, you know, with Mike Conley and that front line, even though they don't have Rudy Gay anymore, they're still so dangerous on the front line. I think they're going to turn out to be too much for San Antonio. What do you guys think?
I think we both kind of think the same thing. I think Memphis is too much. I just think Conley has got to nullify Parker enough so they can win in 6 or 7, you know, and to say, like, you don't want Parker getting 30 and, like, 9 assists. If you know, Conley could sort of keep him in that 18 to 23, and then he could score, you know, 13 and get a little, you know, 7-8 assists himself. And he's been playing great. We all know Conley has really stepped up his game and made a difference for them. You know, Zach and, you know, Zebo and Gasol are going to do their thing. And then the veteran, Tayshaun Prince, is really impressed. So, you know, we'll see. And I think that they're going to – I think Memphis will win too.
Really? I like San Antonio. I like San Antonio. I think that San Antonio wins a Game 7 at the AT&T Center. I think when it comes down to it, that home court for them is big. And I think Memphis got all the confidence in the world from 2 years ago and from the two previous series, but I still think ultimately San Antonio can play on both sides of the ball. Memphis has been scoring a little bit better than they have been during the regular season, but I think at the end of the day, San Antonio has a little too much for them, and they'll win a decisive Game 7 at home.
Yeah. So, Ian, so we fans can keep following you. You know, we always, you know, give out your Twitter, you know, at Ian Begley, but Right now, I'm sure you probably get a little vacation, but are you going to cover the Yankees, the Mets? How can people follow Ian Begley and his work and what he's doing at ESPNNewYork.com?
Well, yeah, definitely follow me on Twitter, guys. I will be covering the Knick off season, and I'll also be bouncing around between Yankees and Mets this summer. So I'll be around. I'm not going anywhere, and I'll keep everyone updated on Twitter and on ESPNNewYork.com. Guys, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks always, Ian. We appreciate it. Go, Knick.
No problem, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, Ian. Yep, that was Ian Begley from ESPN New York, an amazing, you know, just a great writer. He asked great questions always in the post game to the players and to, you know, Mike Woodson. And, you know, hey, he's a regular on Ray and Tay Today, just a great insider from ESPN, and we always appreciate him. And look, you know, I mean, it's Monday. Everybody's talking Knicks from the weekend. And Ray and Tate today got Ian Begley. So that's all you need to know right there, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, he's a good guy. And I like the way he, you know, he's pretty level in his analysis, right? He's he brings you the facts. He gives his opinion, and he sprinkles it in with the facts. And so it's good to hear him and his opinion. You know, I respect how he thinks and how he analyzes the game. I disagree with the outcome. I think the Spurs are going to take care of business. But,
well, you know what's so funny, Ray?
No, I
totally agree with you in a sense that you feel like this might be their last run. There's just something about Zach and Gasol. If they really force feed, I think they could just in a long knock them out, drag out series that they could wear down the Spurs. But, you know, I mean, Parker, Ginobili, and then the way Kawhi Leonard and Green have been stepping up, you know, that youth infusion really gives the Spurs something that 2 years ago wasn't just really there for them, against Memphis. So it's going to be fun either way. And, you know, for me, I don't know, the Pacers, man, Dwayne Wade's got to really, you know, you don't want him to be hurt. But I think for the Pacers to be able to pull that series out, I got the Heat in six. I respect the Pacers enough that they'll get two games. And like Ian, man, I think Paul George is totally coming of age. He does everything on the court, you know, and that's what the Knicks need. You know, let's just sum up really what Ian was talking about. And, you know, for us, obviously, you know, we do a lot of the NBA and we do a lot of college, and, you know, the Knicks are the 24th pick. And with the lotteries tomorrow, I think it's a perfect little segue here. I think, Ray, the Knicks, they do need a little bit of offense. They do need a big man that Ian was saying, you know, with some youth. I think it's going to be hard to do much with the mid-level and stuff, but, you know, players want to play with Melo and veterans. I don't know who on the market they'll be able to get, you know, it'll be small pieces. But I think in the draft, in the first round, people say there's a weak draft, but it's sort of like football, right? It's not the big studs and stars, but I think there's a lot of solid NBA careers and talent in this draft. And so I wouldn't mind a Whiffy from Kansas or Deshaun Thompson from Ohio State or, you know, somewhere in that, a three or four that can either, you know, they can play on both sides, and I think both of them could eventually do that. I like Whiffy just because of the length and the shot blocking. What do you think?
I like Ian's point a lot about multifaceted players, because if you think about it, you know, you look at from even the front court, right, even the starting front court, right, when we're healthy. Carmelo's more of an offensive player, and he's a defensive player when he's engaged, which he has been a lot this year, so I give him credit. But ultimately, yeah, he's more of an offensive player. Tyson is really a defensive player. Amari is an offensive player. J.R. Smith, again, when he's in the game, he can go both ways. Kidd at this point of his career, you know, was diminished, but, you know, he used to be a pretty much a fantastic two-way player. Wasn't a great scorer, but obviously was a great facilitator. Novak, Copeland, offensive players. You know, Kenyon.
Yeah, it's just Shumpert, really.
But more of a defensive player. Shumpert, a two-way player. So that's a great way to look at the Knicks. You know, how many players are predominantly one-way players and how many players are predominantly two-way players. So you need size, you need athleticism, and you need youth as the Knicks. So those are all premium commodities to try and go get. So the way you get it, quote-unquote cheaply, is with the mid-level exception, which, again, and the mini exception that the Knicks have, and also in the draft. So people say the draft doesn't matter. Well, you know what? In a salary-capped environment where you've got money, what, close to $60 million committed to Carmelo, Tyson, and Amari, your front court, that we've just said that the three of them are not 100% well-rounded, you know, players, guess what? The draft matters. You know, if you want to step up and get to that next level, you need to try. Now, you may not get him, right, but you need to try to draft yourself a Paul George, because you're not going to be able to get him in free agency, so he'll just cost you too much money, and you don't have the salary cap room for him. So you really do have to go out and try to find some diamond in the rough, whether it's from Europe, whether it's from the D League, whether it's from drafting somebody, whether it's developing a Copeland. You've got to be creative. You know, you got to go San Antonio Spurs style, right, and go get yourself a Tony Parker at the end of the first round.
In the second round, those second round steals.
Forrest Diaw types, you know. You need to find these guys. So it's incumbent on the Knicks to get real creative, because it's not, you know, the blockbuster trade that's going to get you this talent that you need to get past the second round of the playoffs. It's going to be creative talent acquisition.
Yeah, no, and I like what we have in system. You know, I think, like you said, I think Gronwell will do, you know, the best that he can do, and I think we put together a pretty good roster this year. I just think the age did really, get to us. You know, Camby will probably be back. I think it's going to be hard to keep JR. I got to be honest with you. I don't think he's going to give us a hometown discount. He did that this year. I don't know about you. I think it's going to be hard to find a veteran or even a young player with the minimal, you know, with the mid-level or the veterans minimum. So I might bring back Kenyon Martin. I think Kenyon showed enough that him being our backup forward or center, that he's good in that role. But, yeah, you've got to get someone – that is, you know, a young player to develop. I would keep Copeland. I think too often the Knicks have been known of getting rid of young talent. And, yeah, he's 27, now 28-year-old rookie, right? But Copeland, he's still young. He plays young. And I think, look, he can learn the defense, right? It's effort. He's just got to learn how to move, you know, block out better on the rebounds and the pick and roll. But I think the body is there. I think the smarts and the skill level is there. He's athletic, and he's got some nice size, and his shot and his scoring is totally there. So to me, I just question, you know, if you can keep a Novak, although I think he's probably on a contract, but, you know, in terms of being a major player with this team, because like you and Ian were both saying, you know, we have so many one-way guys on this team. It's just kind of frustrating. The roster is sort of limited in that sense, and you can't really trade Amari.
Yeah, well, and back to Amari, right? So you still have this fundamental question that hasn't been answered, which is, can Amari and Carmelo coexist, right? So Amari goes down, it becomes Carmelo's year, and, you know, like we said before, if LeBron didn't have, you know, this amazing year, Carmelo would have been the MVP. So he had an MVP-like year, even though he didn't get the trophy. He had an MVP-like
and Durant
year.
Too,
but we still don't know if they can play together. And, again, if you're paying Amari $20 million, you need them to be on the court at the same time. This will not work if, you know, you need to stagger their minutes and they can only be on the court together 10, 12 minutes a game. They need to play 35 minutes a game, and maybe they don't overlap for 35 minutes, but they overlap for 25, 30 minutes. So you got to figure out a way.
And definitely the last 4 or 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, right? You know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can't put all your eggs in the one basket with Melo. And I think Amari is a good enough scorer for so many years that it's proven that you can go to him. I just don't know if You know what I think? I think Felton has got to be a little bit more dominating next year on this team in terms of, look, I'm going to be, you know, Jigga the Genius, and I'm going to, you know, control my pick and, you know, we'll get the pick and rolls going with me and Chandler or me and Amari. I'll feed, you know, Melo, and, you know, we'll isolate with him, or even sometimes Melo playing point forward, which seems like that could work, where he does a little pick and roll with Amari. But it's a frustrating roster, not in a really, it's not like a bad way, right? You know, we're sort of in that place now where next year you expect them to step up again, you know, to say, okay, fine, maybe this year we thought Eastern Conference Finals, but we did better than last year. So then next year, if you're looking at a progression, you know, and they keep improving, they should be able to battle with the Heat, you know?
Well, that's going to be something that the Knicks haven't dealt with in over a decade, which is expectations.
Success.
So how are we going to, in New York, going to accept the Knicks as, hey, second place in the Eastern Conference, went to the Eastern Conference semis. Now you think next year will be better, so you're looking at the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, Miami's not going anywhere, so obviously they're either going to win or lose, most likely, in the NBA Finals, and they're going to be favored to win the East and maybe even favored to win the NBA again next year. So what you're looking at is, again, finishing number two in the Eastern Conference, winning the Atlantic Division, finishing number two, but then eventually meeting the Heat in the Finals of the Eastern Conference. So that would be your goal next year as a Knicks fan and as a Knicks organization. But you're coming back basically with the same roster from a major player standpoint, right? You might have some minor players filling in at that, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth man type of role. But is this roster good enough to repeat, you know, get that second place in the Eastern Conference and maybe even beat the Pacers or somebody else next year in the playoffs? Again, Pacers,
let me ask you this:
matchup.
If we lose. No, I just want to answer real quick. If we lose JR, how do you think we replace him? Do you think it could just simply be maybe the draft pick and Shumpert? Or is it sort
and
of
Amari,
also he gets
Amari,
replaced
Amari,
by
Amari?
Amari's points, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, Amari obviously plays a different game. But, you know, JR's, 18 a game, that's hard to replace.
Major.
Especially with the fact that he creates his own shot, right? And Amon Shumpert is a talent. But he's not an offensive, get your own shot. JRC, he's not that kind of talent, right? He's more of a versatile, right? Not yet. And even at Georgia Tech, he wasn't a pure scorer. He wasn't a, you know, J.R. Smith. You step on the court and he's already got 7 points. You're like, how'd that happen? Now he may have taken 12 shots to get those 7 points, but he's already got his 7 points the minute he steps in the gym. So it'll be tough. It will be tough.
Yeah.
And like you said,
and that's
I don't
something.
Know what the
it's
Knicks
funny you said that, Ray, because that's something Knicks fans have to appreciate and respect. I think because of after the suspension, against Boston, and since after that game, he sort of wasn't the same guy, and only had one game where he really sort of scored a lot for us, and the shooting percentage went drastically down. But JR was the sixth man of the year, our second leading scorer, and, one of the better two-way players in the NBA this season. That's not something that we could easily replace or take lightly. So I just hope Knicks fans, I hope people sort of realize that. We kind of need JR, to be honest with you.
And the other thing you'll see is just look at how much money he'll get paid. So obviously, there's going to be other teams out there who want his services and other teams that can pay a lot more than
Atlanta, Dallas. Service. You don't think Atlanta and Dallas might go after J.R. Smith with the money they're going to have?
Sure.
Hell yeah. It's, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be an interesting offseason. And listen, we'll probably talk to Ian about it. Like he said, he'll be doing the next offseason. We'll get him in probably for some Yankees-Mets talk as well. And I think listen, Ray and Tay will, be giving you, stuff, obviously, about the draft and, maybe, even get in some of the college guys, maybe even like a Seth Davis who we've had before on, you know, from CBS, who just breaks down and knows the college game and can really give you insight to, you know, who, not just the Knicks, but who teams and players will draft. You know, one quick note, we talk about this lottery, Ray. I think it's interesting that Oklahoma City, you know, is in the lottery, and, you know, hey, they got a ball in there. What if OKC gets a top three pick and then a Westbrook coming back? You know, that could change their whole, you know, outlook.
Imagine
and
if
stuff.
If they get Ben McLemore, or if they get and they believe he's the truth, like a Nerlens Noel, or like you said, later in the lottery, and Alex Len, they get some size, or they can get a Cody Zeller and basically bring him along slowly. So you got to be excited if you're an Oklahoma City fan to be in the draft, even though we said next year's draft is going to be fantastic. It might be one of the better drafts, you know, in the last 10 years. But this draft, from Oklahoma City's standpoint, you don't usually have a team that's a perennial, you know, conference finalist or maybe even an NBA finals type of team that gets to be in the lottery. So they're very excited in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, no, definitely. So listen, let's just sum it up. I'm going to go with the Grizzlies. And yeah, I don't know, 6 or 7, but I'm going to go Grizzlies. You're going Spurs. We're both going Heat. I say Heat in 6. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think it's a repeat of last year. I think Heat in 5 or 6. I think that last year showed the Pacers that they can win, but it also showed the Heat that when they need to, they clamp down.
Yeah, the defense of LeBron. Look, if Wade needs to give you old Wade for just even 2 games, then LeBron and Bosh could win the other 2. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I look at it in that sense. And it's going to be fun, man. And listen, Heat Spurs, we talked about it, the sort of the developing legacy of LeBron, right? And then the end of a legacy of the great Tim Duncan, the two of them in a rematch, but in a different level than when it was Spurs and Cleveland, right? Now LeBron's got help.
That was 6 years ago. 2007,
incredible.
That was that sweep when Cleveland was swept by the San Antonio Spurs. That's the last time the Spurs have been in the finals, and obviously the first time LeBron made it.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to believe, but like we said, you know, look, if LeBron gets this one, you know, he's sort of in that rare air where he's climbing, you know, in the top 10, 15 players of all time, maybe, you know, getting very close or, you know, very much, you know, I don't want to say necessarily passing, but on the way of passing Larry Bird as the best small forward of all time. And then you've got Ginobili and Parker, who are great players in their own right, but then the legendary power forward slash center, Tim Duncan, who, if he got another ring, you know, and that puts him in a whole nother level, right?
Yeah, 5.
That's like, Timmy. Big fundamentals. So, all right, well, listen, let's wrap up the show with a little bit of Major League Baseball. Baseball has been very, very good to me. How about the Yankees, man? 27-16, a half a game up still on Baltimore, and, you know, just plugging along. And the surprise easily of, you know, maybe baseball in the American League East, considering all that they did not have, you know, Granderson's back now, but all that they did not have in the beginning of the season, you got to be impressed, right?
You know, I basically said that until the All-Star break, the Yankees would be lucky to be in, you know, fourth place, third place, not in the American League, but in the AL East. You know, I thought that they would have a lot more trouble than they've been having. So kudos to them. You know, 27-16, that's pretty impressive. So Yankee pitching has been excellent, given that they, you know, were a couple of guys down. Mariano, what can you say? He's back as if he never left. And
incredible, right?
AL East, Yankees, Boston, Baltimore, Tampa, Toronto. Again, it's still, we talked about this last week, right? It's almost exactly opposite. Not exactly. I had the Yankees finishing 4th and Boston finishing 5th, but it's almost exact opposite of what I expected.
Flip,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, Yankees, look, if you're a Yankee fan, you got to be very grateful that this team, you know, after, what is it, 43 games, so about a quarter of the season, has not only tread water, but, you know, has been winning games. I mean, these guys are second-best record in the American League. So how do you think, though, if you're a Yankee fan, how do you think they play this, Teixeira coming back, and then they're saying A-Rod is hitting off a tee, and how do you guys back in?
I think you gotta take it slow. I don't think – it's such a long grind. It's such a long season. I think even as they come back, you ease them in because of the fact that, look, we're not, like, begging for them to come back because we're playing good ball. So you could sort of ease them in and get them right because I think – look, we've got a manager who played, and Girardi, you know, we've got a veteran, you know, mindset and team. I think they know that it is a marathon, and we've got to ease them in. And I think it's just the best way to do it. And thank goodness for, you know, Overbe and Vernon Wells, who's just been playing out of his mind. Hafner, these veterans who have come in and just, it's not even contributed. They've just come in and they're having, in some ways, some of their best seasons, you know, as individual players. I mean, gosh, this is like, I feel like, is this the old Vernon from Toronto? Like, you know, so it's exciting. And, you know, CeCe and Corrado, you know, the pitchers are just holding us down. And Mariano is Mariano. I mean, just, you know, it takes you, makes you feel like you were, you know, just up in the stadium and just rocking in the crowd. And you know what? Matter of fact, let me see, Ray. I might have a little something for you.
Hola,
check
baby.
This out.
¿Cómo estás? This is Dominican Lou. You know, and I love this sports radio. I've been listening to Reggae Nomado since like 89. Reggae Mike, SVP, and Rosulo. But, you know, I like these new guys, man, because they give me the baseball. Because, you know, I go to the Bronx, baby. I love the Yankees, NBA, NFL, the college football, college basketball. Man, you want good sports talk? You listen to Ray and Tay today. Comprende? Escuchen. Adios.
Wow, Dominican Lou, a real Yankee fan, chiming in, giving out love to Ray and Tay. That is awesome.
Dominican Lou, he said, escucha, listen to me.
Escucha, baby. Oh, that's great, that's great. Listen to Ray and Tay. Oh, that's funny, I like that. So, what about the Indians? You know, we can't give the Yankees too much love. You know, we're New York guys, but we're, you know, we're coast to coast. I'm out here in Arizona, and the D-backs are in first in the West. But how about for all of our Ohio guys, the Cleveland Indians, Ray? Are you shocked?
Steve Francona for president.
Well, you know, look, we both are big fans and have a lot of respect for him, and, you know, just know what kind of, you know, player and manager he, you know, is and has been. And, you know, but they're like, that's like a nice little youth movement and now starting to pay off. I think they might ahead of schedule.
Well, yeah, exactly. So all these guys are paying off. So, you know, everybody knew that Carlos Santana was a great catching prospect. But, you know, Michael Brantley is having a nice season. He's hitting over 300. I think he's got 12 home runs and 37 RBIs, and you got Carlos Santana. But then your big question mark were a lot of these acquisitions that they made. And you know what? Our boy Nick Swisher goes out there and is giving them Nick Swisher-type stats, right? And we thought, oh, he's got a lot of protection in the Bronx, and he's got that short porch, so what can he do? But you know what? He's hitting around 275. He's doing his thing. And then this kid, Jason Kipnis, had a long hitting streak. And then, you know, Mark Reynolds is doing his thing. So everybody, Stubbs and Cabrera, everybody is sort of pitching in. They brought in Michael Bourne to get out there and, you know, cause some havoc in the outfield, steal some bases. He's only given them 20 games. But, you know, this Cleveland Indian team is not bad. I tell you what, it's not bad. I like the effort that they're putting forward. I like what they're doing. My personal fear, though, you know, again, Justin Masterson, is pitching out of his mind, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that they can hold on and do this for the rest of the year. That's my only fear, is that this start, right, they got those two pitchers, McAllister and Masterson, and then they've got those hitters that are basically, you know, they're sort of playing at or above their business card, their baseball card, right?
The back of their card, yeah.
So I'm not sure.
The Tigers will probably overtake them, you're thinking.
I don't know if the Indians, make the playoffs right now. Even given that they're in first place right now, you know, Detroit's 2.5 back, Kansas City, who I picked to make the playoffs in the American League, and it'll be tough for them, but they're 4.5 back, so they're right at 500. So, look, I don't have anything bad to say about Cleveland. I'm just, if I'm a Cleveland fan, I'm thinking, all right, don't burst my bubble. You know, it's sort of like the, what the Red Sox had.
You're cautious.
For years.
You're excited, but
yeah,
you got to be
cautious.
Cautiously
optimistic. I don't want like a June swoon that the Red Sox used to have in the 80s and the 90s, you know, when they were in the, what was that, 84 years between championships before they got to got their first ring in 04. So I like the Cleveland team. I love what Tito Francona's doing. Ultimately, though, I think the roster catches up to them, and I think that they don't necessarily make the playoffs. But you know what? Kudos to them. First, again, just like the Yankees, 43 games, and they're 26-17. So, hey, they're playing ball over there by Lake Erie.
Yeah. What are you thinking about the AL West?
So, you know, where are the Angels? That's our team that we thought, you know, Artie Moreno kind of sold his soul to the devil in some ways, right? He was always very, very prudent with his money and didn't really sign big free agents. And then I don't know if he got into an arms race with the Dodgers, but in back-to-back years, he signs Pujols and Josh Hamilton. Now, two guys that, you know, Pujols is getting up there a little bit in age and he signs into this long contract and – Hamilton,
year two of a
also.
10-year deal, right? I mean, come on.
I thought we learned our lesson when A-Rod signed his. But you know what? I don't know. I don't know about the Angels. So that's kind of TBD. I think they will have a great second half. But right now, they're digging themselves a heck of a hole. And, you know, in that NL West, you know, that team that just doesn't go away is Oakland. Right, so in the AL West, that team that doesn't go away is Oakland, and the team that I like that you didn't like in the beginning of the season, Texas. You know, Ron Washington loses Josh Hamilton, and everybody says, okay, you know, they've got some question marks. You know, they had bounced Alexi Agando to and from the bullpen, and then they had another starting pitcher go down, and then they thought, okay, you know, what next? What other negative thing can happen to the Rangers? But you know what? At 29-15, they have the best
Incredible.
Record of the American League.
Yeah.
So
I give you props with that. And we both and everyone has got to start to respect Ron Washington as a manager. And I don't think in the game he's getting enough respect. Because you know what? He's a heck of a manager. And if he pulls it off again this year and gets back to the World Series, win or lose, he's going to have to start to get, you know, major, major respect. I just want to throw this out to you, because when you think about what Cabrera did last year, right now, he's batting 387, 47 ribbies, right, leading the majors in both of those categories, and then there's four guys with 12 homers, and he's got 11. So he's right there again, Ray, at the Triple Crown, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is amazing.
Triple Crown?
What?
This isn't horse racing where you got to win three races. And even that hasn't been done since 78, but it was done 73, 77, 78. I mean, this is leading in three statistical categories over a 162-game season. That, folks, is phenomenal. Miguel Cabrera is just a baseball player.
Listen, another great show. Thanks to Ian Bailey for coming on. You know, listen, we're going to have an interesting schedule, so just stay tuned. We'll be, you know, keeping you updated. Ray is globetrotting, ladies and gentlemen, so hopefully I think we'll still try to be on for you, you know, Mondays and Fridays, maybe a couple Thursdays, but you'll hear Ray and Tay. We'll be here for you for the NBA playoffs, obviously the finals, the draft, you know, baseball and everything, and Thanks for talking sports with friends, man. Another great show. Thanks to Ian Begley.
We're out. Talking sports with
friends.
Peace.
Ray and Tay, today, a little bit. Ray and Tay, today, a little bit.